The NBA Today podcast is presented by Axe. Wake up and stay alert with new Axe Rise, one of four shower gels designed to fix you up. Baseline.
To baseline.
Very good execution of a two-on-one fast break.
Coast.
To coast.
Takes it all the way down the lane.
This.
Two-hand jam.
This is the NBA Today.
The NBA Today.
What's going on? NBA Today at ESPNradio.com is our email address. I'm Ryan Russillo, the NBA Today podcast. And what we're going to do is just run through old school style. Tales from the couch.
From the couch.
I will retire now to my couch of perpetual indulgence.
All right, four games last night. Was able to get a good look at every one of them. But the game that I was looking forward to the most, Lakers at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it was over early. The Lakers win it 111-87. They were up 21 at the half after losing by 21 points in Game 4. And this was about the bigs, especially in that first quarter. Now, Oklahoma City is outscored 31-16 in the first quarter. So that is a total of 47 first quarter points in first quarters at Los Angeles now in three games. Think about that. 47. 47 would be a really good quarter, but in three straight quarters combined, that's not what you're looking for. And it was with the guys on the inside. And I went back and looked at the shot chart on this, and it was basically Bynum, four makes, Gasol a make, Odom had a dunk, Artest had a close bucket, Derek Fisher had a close bucket. They had eight layup slash dunks combining for 16 points in just that first quarter. It is an element of this series that I can't understand why it can't be more consistent for the Lakers. Their bigs are just too good. They are too good for Oklahoma City's front line. I'm saying it about every single game in this matchup, but I just can't believe why this isn't exploited more, why this advantage for the Lakers isn't the reason why the series, like, look, it should be, at most it should have been a six-game series. It could have been even less. And I know people like to look at Kobe and say that he's the problem, and I think he was definitely the problem in Game 3 because you're taking 29 shots and missing 19. You're not going to win a lot of games that way. But if he is content to let the bigs, and Gasol was passing to Bynum, like, that was the beauty of what they were doing offensively. If he is content to let them kind of get set up, then that's going to make it easier for him later on. And I'm not going to sit here and tell him, oh, he needs to do this, because we overanalyze Kobe far too much. He also started defensively on Russell Westbrook. Fisher slid off of him onto Cephalosha. And Westbrook goes 4-13, 15 points, second leading scorer. But 4-13 is the key there with eight turnovers. Why it took them until Game 5 to figure out to put Kobe on Westbrook, I'll never know. Now, I'm not saying that, like, Fisher has been abused by Westbrook as much as he has in other spots, in that it was mandatory, but it just makes you better, because now Westbrook has to work that much harder, especially in transition, because Kobe did a really good job in certain spots last night, picking him up and making him change his angle on his dribble. Durant goes 5 of 14, 17 points, but an off night for him, and only 6 free throw attempts. Free throw disparity on this one, Lakers 31 attempts, Oklahoma City 24. Rebounding numbers belong to the Lakers. Assist numbers, 27 assists to 18, and the personal fouls, the Thunder charged with 25 personal fouls. I also thought the Lakers defensively did a really good job on rotations and shutting off driving lanes. There were times there where James Harden would get a catch and he'd want to go. Jeff Green as well. And they'd be shut off towards the baseline or kind of filtered back towards traffic. At one point, the shooting numbers, the splits on this, the Lakers were hitting 63% of their shots. Oklahoma City 21% with 8:30 to go in the second quarter. Oklahoma City tried to get James Harden going. He, remember, the first two games of the series at L.A., 0 points, 0 for 5 shooting in 26 combined minutes. Game 3 and 4, he goes for 32 minutes, 18 points, 24 minutes, 15 points. He gets to play 25 minutes last night, scores only 11 points on 4 of 10 shooting, and you saw Fisher on Harden a little bit later. So this series, it'll be funny if L.A. can pull it out at Oklahoma City at Game 6. It's not going to be easy. It's a great atmosphere. As Jay Adande told us last week, the loudest arena he's ever been in covering any single game. But it'll be kind of funny how we look at the Lakers going into the beginning of next week versus how we felt about them just 2 days ago, or at least publicly. When I say we, I guess I'm talking about everyone in the media and fans. But I'm not surprised by this whatsoever. this outcome. I actually called this on the show yesterday with Scott Van Pelt. They're like, what do you think is going to happen? I said, this game reminds me of the game where L.A. played Utah on a Friday night on ESPN towards the end of the regular season. The Lakers are starting to get more and more criticism. They were being asked about their finish and their inconsistency over a few weeks, and they came out and put up a huge, huge first quarter on Utah. Utah actually got back in that game, but L.A. hang on to win that one. That's what I expected to happen last night, and that's what happened. 31-16 in that first quarter, and they never really had to look back. And if they finish this one out in six, it'll seem kind of silly that we got really worked up thinking that an eight was going to be a number one, because I just don't think it's going to happen. Dallas trying to hang on, down 3-1 at home against the San Antonio Spurs, and they do just that. 103-81, the victory for Dallas. Caron Butler, a huge night, but I want to start with the start of this game because it looked like Dallas was pushing tempo, trying to get easier baskets. They struggled quite a bit in the half court once San Antonio has bottled them up, and they ended up having a huge lead. They were up 43-27. They were up 51-35. The matchups went this way. You had George Hill and Kidd matched up. Manu was being guarded by Marion. And then on the other side, you had a switch with Butler on Richard Jefferson. And then they kind of mix-matched that one defensively. Brandon Haywood played on Duncan and Antonio McDyess on Dirk. So a little bit of a cross matchup there defensively with the wings. But you get the matchup. So, it was an 18-8 start, so, you know, look, I can go through all these different combinations of what they were able to do, but the key here is that Caron Butler was going off, and you've given him a hard time on this podcast, partially because I like him so much as a player, but when I'd watched him more and more now with Dallas, especially during the playoffs, he's just making a ton of mistakes, and last night, that was not the case. 35-11, as we mentioned, 12 of 24 shooting, and I think he did it really all over the court. His plus-minus was by far the worst of any of the Mavs players through the first four games of this playoff series, but he had 20 at the half. Dirk with 10 at the half. San Antonio actually scared the hell out of you if you were a Mavs fan, because this game went from 51-35, as we mentioned, to Tony Parker going kind of on a one-man show towards the last 2.5 minutes thereabouts of the first half with an 11-2-1 that cut it to 7 at the half. So you're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, San Antonio's turning the ball over, they're bad in transition, Duncan's giving you nothing, and by the way, Duncan, another off night, 24 minutes, 11 points for him, 6 boards, we'll get to kind of the minute dispersal later on in this one for San Antonio, and Parker has 17 points at the half, and you're thinking, wait, Dallas dominated, now they're only up 7? You're gonna be kidding me, Jan Mahimi's in this game? Now, granted, that was because Dewan Blair actually had 4 fouls, but Dallas answers right away out of the gate, start of the third quarter. They go on an 8-0 run, so get it back to reasonable numbers. They outscore San Antonio 29-18, and what you expected to see, I think, is what happened last night. Dallas, to lose this series 4-1 would have been terrible. Rick Carlisle doesn't deserve to lose his job, but it just would have been one of those growing things where, you know, Dallas over this decade, I went back and looked at it, and other than beating the Spurs and then getting into the NBA Finals and losing a series that ultimately they, you know, that 13-point lead, what, in the third quarter of Game 3, you have a hard time even thinking about that one. And then beating San Antonio last year in the first round, and a lot of people would say, well, San Antonio wasn't healthy, so that's why. I mean, other than that, there's a lot of really bad playoff exits that you can't fathom. And this was going to be another one, even though it was only a 5-win differential between where the Mavs were in the regular season at 55-27 and San Antonio at 50-32. How about Roger Mason? I was looking at Roger Mason's numbers late in the second half, and at that point he had missed a 3 and he had 0.0 rebounds and 1 assist in this series. So, that's not exactly what you're looking for there. But you know, you can't get really worked up one day and then completely change course the next day based on who wins and who loses. The Spurs just had bad shooting night, 39%, 18 from 3, 11 turnovers as you mentioned, a lot of turnovers, especially some just loose passes. And they had given up 27 free throw attempts, and I was putting these numbers together about 2.5 minutes ago in the third when it was essentially over. Dallas had a 40-20 point advantage in the paint. And then Popovich was like, I'm done. He yanked Duncan, Manu, Tony Parker, Richard Jefferson, and George Hill, and put in Keith Bogans, Garrett Temple, Jan Mahimi, Matthew Bonner, Garrett Temple. I mean, Dewan Blair wasn't even in there. That's what he did. He sat down his starters, and they never brought him back in the game. And I actually give Pop credit for that, because Game 6 is going to mean everything for his franchise. He knows he needs to rest guys. Duncan, even with the extra time off, has now looked a little weak the last 2 games. And one other note on this one, Eric Dampier did not play in the game. So looking at his numbers over the course of the series, he goes from 30 to 22 to 27 and 19 minutes in Game 4 to 0 minutes last night. He has 5 points and hadn't scored in the last 3 games, so out of the starting lineup and never got to play. So he was the only actual active player to not see action. So I don't know if there'll be more to this as we learn throughout the day of an injury of some sort. Haywood's dunk after a hard foul that meant nothing and the tough guy stare. I think we could all, if there was a mailing list that we could sign up for to not see that anymore, I think we all would. It's a little silly. It was also funny to see Nahara go into the game whenever Blair got in. Nahara's hard foul on Parker was I thought, a little excessive. And we start going for the hands to the face, Iron Sheik move. You probably don't really need to do that. But Dallas did what they needed to do. They'll survive. Terry says they're going to come back for Game 7. But what's he going to say? Well, this was fun. Glad we got two wins in this series, but there's no way we're beating San Antonio in Game 6. No, of course not. He said what you'd expect him to say. Cleveland moves on to round two. They'll face the Celtics. We'll get to that game in a few minutes here. But 96-94, your final. Very close game throughout. Cleveland up 27-26 after one. They end up 7 up at the half, 55-48. Chicago outscores them by 5 in the third and 23 apiece even in the fourth quarter. We'll get to the last few possessions on this one. But let's look at some of the notes coming into this. Cleveland now beat Chicago for the first time ever in a playoff series. And going into this one, Luol Deng's calf put him as a question mark. Derrick Rose had that nasty ankle turn in Game 4. And they both didn't practice, but you had heard that they both were going to play. But the problem is with Deng, if he's not going to be a steady second offensive player, then really Chicago has no choice than to give it to Derrick Rose every single time. They still kind of do that anyway. But those two guys went off last night. Deng, 26 points. And Rose, not a great shooting night, 27, 31 points for him, 6 assists. But after that, there wasn't a lot, but their shooting numbers weren't terrible. I mean, 46% on the road against Cleveland, not bad. And they took 29 free throws. Deng getting to the line 11 times. Now, Cleveland offensively, Antoine Jameson was the man in the first half, 14 points. LeBron only took 2 shots in the first half. And 18 minutes into this one, I have him at only 2 shots. It might have been 3, actually. But he was a total of 3 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds. Very willing to let everybody get off on this one in the first half. And I understand that. And they got the win, but felt like Cleveland was very disinterested in this series altogether. It was 70-69 with about 2 minutes to go in the third, and this really was all Rose and Deng again. And Brad Miller had a stretch where he got charged for his 4th and 5th foul trying to defend Shaq, and that was at 74-all with 10 minutes to go in the game. The calls were horrendous. Just awful, awful foul calls. Noah got one right after that. That was a little bit more of a foul because he was leaning into Shaq so much. But Brad Miller, you know, again, looked like he was about to cry, which we are very familiar with, but it just was so, I mean, the calls were laughable. Like, what are you supposed to do? You've got to leverage your body against Shaq's weight somehow, so yeah, you're going to lean on him, and that's, I think, the payoff. Like, you have to, as an official, allow that lean by the defensive player to offset the fact that you're not going to call anything when Shaq's 300-plus pound body is going to try to push somebody out of the way and off of their position. You know, you could charge, you could hit Shaq with a charge all the time, or you could really let a defensive player get hit with something by leaning and trying to leverage his elbow into a player. And I think what you just say is, hey, we're not going to call either of those things. So unless it's a shot or a legitimate push, you know, nothing's going to happen. And unless it's a really nasty charge where Shaq is trying to do something to hurt a defensive player, then we're not going to call anything. So those calls are pretty bad, but I don't really know if that was the difference between Chicago winning and losing. Cleveland went through a really bad stretch where they only hit 1 field goal over about 9 minutes. And Shaq actually ended that stretch with a big dunk. LeBron started attacking more, started taking some more free throws, although Cleveland couldn't hit any free throws last night. 18 of 28, they missed 10. I mean, obviously they hit 18 of them, but to shoot 64% as they've struggled in that department isn't exactly great. But LeBron got to 14 points. They were up about 4 with 5.5 to go. And you know, there are stretches where Luol Deng is a nice player and you get excited about him, and there are stretches where he gets caught in this long two position and tries to hit a bailout two where they might have had a better option somewhere else. Jameson hits a 3 that puts him up 93-84. You're thinking this game is over, and the Chicago comes all the way back to fight here, and look at what they did defensively. They doubled LeBron twice, and it worked. It led to a LeBron turnover and also a miss by Mo Williams, but Noah couldn't hang on to the rebound, and Cleveland started the possession over again. They also had a switch where Noah actually had to defend LeBron one-on-one at the top of the key, and it worked to a degree, but he ended up going to the free throw line. But it was nice to see a double there by Vinny Del Negro and his defense. Now, having said that, Chicago, with the shot clock off, had the ball back down three, and they run a Derrick Rose drive, like straight at Varejao, goes up and under, miss. Like, you got to take a three there. I understand extending the game. Cleveland wasn't hitting their free throws, but it wasn't like there was a ton of time left. You know, 30 seconds, sure, 20 maybe, but when you're taking a shot with less than 10, you kind of need that one to be a three, because chances are once they get the possession, you lose a few more seconds, and you're probably not going to get a great shot. I guess it's debatable because of the way Cleveland was shooting the free throws, but I didn't really love that play towards the end. A couple more notes. This is from the ESPN research team. The Bulls stopped LeBron's streak of 24 straight playoff games with 20-plus points. It was the longest active streak in the NBA entering play on Tuesday. LeBron scoring 19 points, 16 of those in the second half. It was the first time the Bulls lost in the playoffs when Derrick Rose scored 30-plus points. Cleveland improving to 4-0 all-time at home in Game 5 of the best-of-seven series. Couple notes on this one that I want to finish up with moving forward. Chicago's got a really nice team, man. When they're healthy, it's funny watching them. They're more of a challenge to Cleveland. I still think Cleveland kind of took them for granted a little bit, but they were more of a challenge to Cleveland than Miami was to Boston, or really Charlotte was to Orlando. And if they are able to get one of these pieces this offseason, this could be a top four team in the East next year. Rose is that good. Noah is that great at what he, you know, his specific skills are so rare that he makes up for not being a great offensive threat. And if Dang is healthy, you know, 18 points a game, and he'll be a complimentary offensive player. It'd be great if he was your three. If he's your two, I don't know if you're a 50-win team. As far as Vinny Del Negro's future, everybody thinks he's gone. It was a tough spot for him, but you know, the ownership there hired a guy who's never been a coach. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. How do you hire somebody who wants to be a coach but has never actually coached anywhere? And Mark Jackson, I know, is one of our guys, but I said this before. He keeps wanting to hold out for some of these jobs. Well, sit on somebody's bench for 2 years. You know, just observe. Learn the process. I can't imagine how much better I would know basketball if I just sat on a bench for 2 years. And you think you know stuff, become immersed in it. And they hired somebody that didn't really have that background. And the team, from what I hear, is not a ton of respect there for him. I know Joakim Noah afterwards said that it was a really rough year for Del Negro and he wants him back. What's he going to say? Get this guy out of here? Then Noah looks like the biggest jerk ever, and there's plenty of people hoping that he looks like a jerk so they can criticize him. I love Noah in this series. Man, if you're a Bulls fan, what a great piece that you have. Now, as far as players they could add, you know, the more I start trying to connect the dots, like those old tests that you took in high school, or be the capital of the country, that kind of stuff, how irrelevant is the knowledge of capitals to states? I mean, it really, like somebody like, oh man, you know, I know most of the cap. Who cares? When has that ever mattered? When have you lost out on a girl, a bet, money? Does it affect your credit rating? No. Essentially, it's like being able to name all the dwarfs. All right, so let's move on from that tangent. If Phoenix goes on a run here, how are they letting Amari walk? Okay, whether he opts out or opts back in at $17 million, don't they have to re-sign him? I would say that it's more likely that they have to keep Amari than let him go. All right, so if we agree on that, I still think LeBron stays with Cleveland. I also feel like Joe Johnson stays with Atlanta, and Dwayne Wade's going to stay with Miami. Bosch, I talked to somebody last night that has a pretty good gauge on the situation. They feel like Bosch is going to try to do the right thing with a sign and trade. So could that mean Chicago? And if Boozer leaves Utah, because it just comes down to a money thing, not that they don't want Boozer to be there, but it is a little frustrating when Boozer stays healthy in the contract year. And he's been awesome this year, man. He has been terrific, and who knows what kind of run they go on. Maybe that changes the perception. I had heard going back about a month ago that Utah tried to extend Boozer before the playoffs even started. So, you know, I don't know that it's just about a cost-cutting thing. But say he's gone, maybe he's the guy that ends up in Miami if Amari doesn't move. So now you're trying to plug in. We haven't even talked about New Jersey wanting somebody, Oklahoma City, maybe Houston in the sign-and-trade, getting really proactive, the Clippers, Sacramento with money. Like, there's a bunch of spots out there, and this gets back to our bigger picture theory that we have on this summer, that there are going to be some secondary and maybe tertiary names there that end up getting a lot of cash. But, you know, I don't know that Joe Johnson or Wade are going to end up in Chicago. I would bet against it at this point. But if you were the Bulls, what would you throw to Toronto in a sign and trade for Bosch? Would you throw Dang? You probably would. Would you take Dang back if you were Colangelo? I don't think you can go by history and say, well, he had a chance to draft Dang, but he got rid of that draft pick because Phoenix basically got rid of all their picks that year. But I think you see what I'm saying here. Like, I love the Chicago team and moving forward. I think you're thrilled. I think it's the best spot for any of these big name guys to go to a team and say, here we go. We're all set. It'll be a new coach. You'll have some impact on what, coach is hired there, especially if we're one of the big, big guys. But the more I look at it, the less likely I think the movement, is going to be. And that's right now in late April. That can definitely change. But, you know, Bosch and a sign and trade might be your only real tangible option. And that's with me changing my thinking that, well, we're assuming Bosch is going to leave, and I'm starting to think, well, maybe there's a better chance of that, at least based on some conversations this week. Final game was actually the first game to tip off last night, and even though it was 96-86, the Heat cut it closer a little bit later on, it wasn't really that much of a game. And I'll never quite understand why people thought this was going to be a series. When you looked at the matchups out there throughout the night, they were awful. Pierce, you want to know why Quentin Richardson doesn't like Paul Pierce? Because Pierce abuses him. And then you have Carlos Arroyo on Ray Allen or Darrell Wright. And I know with Wade, you end up putting him on Rondo to try to bottle him up a little bit. But then you'll have combinations of Beasley on KG. Terrible. Beasley only 14 minutes. Then you've got Jermaine O'Neal, whose defense is to wait until you go past him and then try to push you out of the way and complain for getting called with a foul. He plays 26 minutes last night, 7 points on 3 of 10 shooting, 4 boards. Jermaine O'Neal had a, I'm going to pull this up here. He had a terrible series. Yeah, he's played 23 minutes, went 9 of 44. Wow. Shot 20% from the floor, took 7 free throws, made 3, averaged 3 boards a game, 5.5 rebounds a game, 1 assist, and 4 points. That was painful to watch. 31 years old. $23 million this past year. It's not his fault he made that money, right? It's not his fault. So that was interesting. All right, so as I've looked at that. But, you know, Miami's offense consists of high screens for Wade and to work an angle and score because he's that good. He goes for 31 last night, 10 assists, 8 rebounds, hits 9 of 10 free throws, but he was 10 of 24 because he was basically doing it by himself. The rest of the offense is maybe have Chalmers or Arroyo set up something for Wade off of some cuts through the lane, catch and shoot, or catch up, fake, and drive. But that's really what their offense comes down to. Oh, and the other thing that they run is Dwayne Wade relying on somebody else and then making a terrible mistake. Whether it's Beasley with a turnover, Wright with a bad shot, Quentin Richardson with a gut check time 3, 0 for 3 from the outside the arc, 4 points for him last night. Jermaine O'Neal deciding, I haven't shot in a few minutes. Like, Miami's just not very good, so I never quite understood. Like, yeah, the Heat, they can give them a series. And if there's one thing Boston can do, it is slow down a team that really is just one guy. I feel like growing up in the playoffs, like late 80s, early 90s, if you had a special, special player, which Wade certainly is, you could win a round. But today, this team is just him. 46 minutes for the guy last night, and he looked tired in spots. There was just, I just didn't see any way that they were going to be able to move on. So, no one else is hitting shots. Ray Allen was. He had a terrific shooting night last night. He goes for 24 points, 5 of 6 from the floor. Paul Pierce, 21 points. Kevin Garnett actually had some nice buckets late when Miami made a charge back. Wade helped cut a 21-point lead to 69-59, and then he hit a 3. It actually went to 71-65, and then they got it to 73-70, and that was when KG kind of stepped up. Glenn Davis also made a shot, and he celebrated for a half an hour. They also started running some doubles on Paul Pierce, trying to force it out of his hands, and KG burned him a little bit. Now, there were some bad defensive rotations. Miami had more bad ones. There was some double stuff where Wade would try to rely on his teammate, as I said, and it didn't really quite work out. And Ray hit a big 3 to make a 94-83 with about a couple minutes left there, and that was basically it. Now, we'll look at Boston and Cleveland as we preview that later on. I think you can already sense where I'm going with this. I don't think Boston's going to beat Cleveland in the second round at all. I think some people will get excited about this first-round series, but when you watch it, I mean, it was really, really a bad series. I'll give you some numbers here, too, for Miami, how poorly they scored and just played offense. They averaged just under 80 points per game in this series. They shot 39% from the floor, 33% from three, and they averaged about 18 turnovers per game. That is a lot of missteps. Wade, throughout this series, is this his last game? what's going to happen. I don't think he's going anywhere. And something I always am a little frustrated with is the idea that because Wade, he said this, well, I signed a 3-year contract to make sure this team stayed competitive. Like if he had signed a 5-year contract, this team would have started mailing it in. I just don't think that that would have happened. Now, I also think this of your Heat fan, Pat Riley's overrated as this talent evaluator, recruiter, and guy that is going to just step up and bring in all these star players. The run that they made to win a ring, I still feel it's the worst team in my lifetime that I've seen win an NBA championship. And remember, he gave Antoine Walker a 6-year deal in a sign-and-trade. The Celtics at the time couldn't even believe that he wanted to pay him that kind of money. We're talking like 6 years and $54 million. They were able, because of an examination, to whack 2 years off of that deal because of Walker's knee, but it was still an absurd amount of money to pay Antoine Walker at that point. They brought on Jason Williams and his massive contract, what was left on it, and they brought on Shaq and gave him a 5-year, $100 million extension, which, by the way, Shaq is in his final year of now. They won a ring, but they were lucky to get Wade at number 5 in what is maybe the best draft we've ever seen, with Hall of Famers at the 1, at the 3, at the 4, and at the 5, with LeBron, Melo, Bosh, and Wade. Obviously, these guys still have a lot of work to do. Darko probably not going to get a lot of Hall of Fame consideration. But Wade falls to him there at 5, but I keep hearing, well, Riley, he'll figure out. Is he? Is he really going to figure something out? Or is he going to overpay a bunch of guys that didn't deserve the money? And it sucks because I can't sit here and go too far with it because the guy did win a ring, and ultimately that's how everybody's judged. But it is funny how winning can erase what along the way were some terrible basketball decisions. So just because Wade has a shorter-term contract and really wants good players around him doesn't mean it's going to happen. And just because Pat Riley's Pat Riley, I mean, tell me what the definition of Pat Riley is, because I think it's a little less than the perception of what people have. Okay, so that's Tales from the Couch, and we're going to have Rick Bucher on Friday. We might have Nas as well. We're hoping to have him on the Scott Van Pelt Show today. He's on campus, so that, I think, will be a lot of fun. We'll see how that goes. I don't know if Scott and I are taping it, but we want to throw that onto the podcast because I know so many of you guys like hip-hop. So in case you miss the Scott Van Pelt Show podcast or the show actually today, 1 to 4 Eastern time on ESPN Radio and ESPN2, I want to have that happen for you. So we went Tales from the Couch heavy today, and we'll have Bucher and kind of balance it a little bit. So we hadn't done this in a while, so it just felt like kind of getting back to the roots and stuff we were doing during the regular season. Just a couple thoughts. I love the Milwaukee Bucks are 2-2 right now. Absolutely love it. I love what Brandon Jennings did in that stretch where he kept getting into switches and Atlanta couldn't do anything with him. That's a series, man. That's a series, and their mascot can dunk like no one I've ever seen. And Dwight Howard with his foul stuff. Think about that. 22 fouls in 4 games, went 9-9 points and boards, but averaged 5.5 free throws. Obviously, that'd be 22 over the course of 4. He needs to chill out a little bit on it, but I think it's funny that people criticize him, but then they call Phil Jackson a Zen master, right? Like, well, Phil, he's just planting the seeds, Zen master. But Dwight Howard's like, I can't believe I get this many fouls. I'm a star player. And some of us, you know, inherently will go, ooh, I don't like him calling himself a star player. Well, it's not like he's lying. He's a top 5 player in the league. So I think he should be allowed on his website to say, I'm a star player. And, you know, Patrick Ewing never got this treatment. Problem is, Patrick Ewing didn't play nearly as physically, or as physical a game as Dwight Howard does. And speaking of being physical, I want to finish with this. We've made this podcast very, I think, fan-friendly, listener-friendly. Like, we've listened to a lot of the things you've said. I think we've tweaked some things based on it. And I know this is where I turn into a hater a bit, and people get annoyed with that. But I love LeBron. But the elbow stuff, I mean, give me a break. That was, I just try to tell you like it is, man. Does anybody really think that LeBron's elbow is seriously a problem? Somebody, that is my theory of not having male friends close enough to you. Like, you all have your boys, and some of them say, hey, dude, that shirt sucks. Wear a different one. Or, you know, you're a little out of line last Friday. You know, they keep you in check. Somebody needs to tell LeBron, dude, enough with this stuff. You know, your elbow hurt, fine. Lefty, free throw attempt, okay, fine. It didn't even matter, the free throw at that point. But the constant, like, oh, what's going to happen? MRI, everything, no damage whatsoever. Everybody knows he's going to be ready to go. The elbow is going to be fine in game one, but it's just an element of, I love every other part of it, man. Like I say all the time, I could play like anybody, I play like him, but it's just unnecessary. Somebody needs to pull him aside. Hey, LeBron, we get it. Just chill out on the injury stuff, okay? All right, that's my thoughts on that today. And 4 games last night, letter schedule, Mike Yam tomorrow. Mike Yam's done an awesome job, huh? Good stuff out of Mike Yam, helping us round out the week. And the emails, NBAtoday@ESPNradio.com. Until then, if your girl rolls in with a minute left and the score is tied, let her know she's going to have to be quiet for a few minutes.
Thank you for listening to the NBA Today. Download more ESPN podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or on the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.